Hi there, Billy Hindle here, the voice of Alice Dyer in the Magnus Protocol. As part of the Magnus Archive's 10th anniversary, Rusty Quill is hosting a special Magnus Live show at the upcoming Crossed Wires Podcast Festival in Sheffield. Join co-creators Jonathan Sims and Alexander J. Newell on the 5th of July for a new iteration of our live show, Statement Begins, where you can hear fan-favourite statements such as Anglerfish, Red Live, and gain exclusive insights into the creation and history of the show straight from the creators themselves. You can buy your tickets now, including limited numbers of meet and greet tickets, from crossedwires.live or the link in the description of this episode.
Neulich auf der Hundewiese. Sag mal, macht ihr euch eigentlich Sorgen wegen Zecken oder so?
Nö, haben ja Frontpro.
Frontpro, die schmackhafte Kautablette gegen Zecken und Flöhe. Schützt dein Hund zuverlässig. Einen Monat lang. Einfach angewendet, gut verträglich und schnell in der Wirkung. Jetzt in deiner Apotheke vor Ort oder online. Frontpro Zecken- und Flohschutz. Zu Risiken und Nebenwirkungen lesen Sie die Packungsbeilage und fragen Sie Ihren Tierarzt oder Apotheker.
Hi everyone, it's Kareem, the voice of Simon Fairchild from the Magnus Archives. Today I'm here to advertise Beck's End, an upcoming new audio drama that will be launching on the RQ network. Beck's End is a folk horror audio drama about isolation, belief, radicalization, and poses the question if redemption is possible. When floodwaters swallow an idyllic English Lake District village, a stranded journalist finds herself trapped in a rising tide of fear. Cut off from the outside world, she begins to uncover horrors both human and biblical, lurking beneath the surface. If this intrigues you, you can support the creation of Beck's End on Kickstarter until the 17th of July. For more information on the show and to pledge your support, visit becksend.com. That's becksend.com. And you might recognize a voice here or there. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hi everyone, Alex here with a short bit of context ahead of today's episode. This panel on audio in horror was recorded live in late 2019 at the Pod UK Festival, with raw audio kindly provided by Pod UK. That's all for now. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the horror panel. This is less a panel, more a cartographic expedition, within which myself and my elite colleagues over here will attempt to map for you some of the more interesting and innovative elements of modern podcast audio horror. And the best possible thing we can do at the top of every doomed expedition is, of course, take the photo. The one where people get crossed out as the polar bears eat them. See, same wavelength. So what we're going to start off with is introductions, and I'll have all of us explain who we are and what we do and what kind of shows we work on. I'll start. I'm Alistair, your moderator for this evening. I co-own the Escape Artists Podcast Network along with my partner Marguerite Kenner. We produce four shows: Escape Pod, which does science fiction; Pseudopod, which does horror; Cast of Wonders, which does YA; and Podcastle, that does fantasy. I host Pseudopod, the horror show, for a frankly horrifying amount of time. Seriously, I don't want to think about it. I think I'm on the Bayeux Tapestry recording episode 49. In addition to all of that, I also write about the genre a fair amount, and I've turned up in several other voice acting capacities, most recently as Peter Lucas, who is the unsung hero of the Magnus Archives. And I'm on film. I'm on film doing this time.
Unsung.
Percy, who's queen, who, if everyone had listened to, nothing bad would have happened. Not that anything bad happens at the end of the Magnus Archives season 4. And speaking of the Magnus Archives, Alex.
Hi. So I'm the CEO of Rusty Quill Limited, which is a podcast production company and podcast network. And we generate a large number of shows, the most relevant of which to this panel is called the Magnus Archives, which is a horror series that pretends to be an anthology, but it's not. And basically, I think that's as succinct as I can really get, so I'll hand over.
Hi, I'm Gemma. I'm the CEO of Nothing. I write for a number of horror podcast. I write for the No Sleep podcast. I co-write and voice act in a horror comedy show starring Kate Siegel called Calling Darkness. I am also in a season two of Shadows at the Door, which Mr. Alt is involved in, and various other scary, spooky shows hiding on the internet. I'm also a writer. I write books and novels and various other things. So that's me. This is David.
Thank you very much, Gemma. Yeah. As Gemma said, I am David. David Alt. I am a voice actor in the No Sleep podcast. Just 48 hours ago, came back off tour for the European tour, so don't quite know what day it is or where I am. But I'm also the co-host of Shadows at the Door with Mr. Mark Nixon here, and we do ghost stories, M.R. James-style horror with old stuff that has been adapted and new stuff from writers like Gemma Amor. I'm also on The White Vault and various other things, so yes, that's... I'm also Byron and the Byron Chronicles, which has been going since 2006. I know, wow. Yes. I was fresh out of university and this American guy said, would you like a podcast? Yes.
That's free.
Oh, yeah. Then they get you hooked.
Oh, we're going to be fine.
They're all free.
So, this is your elite team of completely doomed scientists who are going to walk up to the big squamous rugose blob of horror, poke it and see what happens. And the first question I want to ask everybody, and I'm going to start at the other end and work back this time, is what brings you to horror as a genre in particular?
Ooh, I think I arrived at horror via sci-fi, probably. One of the reasons I got into voice acting all those many, many years ago was Doctor Who. It was in the wilderness years between 1989 and 2005, where there was no Doctor Who on TV. It's a lot of... It was a long, long time. And the BBC started doing audio dramas of with the old Doctors, and I really enjoyed those, and I thought, are there any other people doing Doctor Who audio dramas? Found some people online, listened to their work, listened to others, and then... I've always liked ghost stories, so yes, I got involved with darker projects, then Pendant Audio, and basically it's sort of gone from there. But it's a deep-seated love of ghost stories and coming in via sci-fi.
I think I came to horror probably via fantasy first. My first and abiding love is fantasy. I grew up on a diet of Robert Jordan and The Wheel of Time and the Point horror books as well when I was a teenager. And I've just always been, as a writer in particular, I'm drawn to making up things because you don't have to follow the rules. So, which is why I will never write a procedural crime drama, because you have to know stuff and everything has to be based in an element of truth. And with horror, you can pretty much invent your own landscape, invent your own world. So, yeah, that's me.
I mostly came to horror through convenience.
That is the single most you sentence I've uttered at that point.
Okay, so for me and horror, I suppose I have most experience on the sci-fi side as well, actually. But in terms of horror as a medium, it is one that's interested me because I think it simultaneously, people think it's the easiest one to get into because, you know, it's just like, oh, the tropes, they're there. You do the tropes and you've done a horror. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it also leaves you very little wiggle room between good horror and hot garbage, which I quite like, that, like, operating in that space. But I have recently been made aware that the things that I make that aren't horror are still nightmare fuel, and which is news to me. I wasn't aware that's a thing. Now I know, and so as a result, I can work with that.
I came to horror in a slightly weird path, one very similar to David's in many ways, in that most of my entry point was science fiction, coupled with the fact that I was, from a relatively young age, perpetrating an elaborate genetic con. I was about 6 foot by the time I was 13, and my voice broke really early. And that was useful, especially in a small rural community with a single screen cinema and the nice old lady behind the counter who at no point went, you're 18, aren't you, Sonny? yes. And she just kind of assumed. And so I saw a frankly ridiculous amount of movies I had no business seeing at least 5 years early. And it left marks in very much a good way. Horror, it horribly traumatizes you, but in a good way.
This explains so much.
Oh, and it's also partially Paul Daniels' fault. Those of you who don't know, Paul Daniels was kind of the avatar of TV stage magic in the UK for a really long time. And he is one half of a very curious binary experiment with horror that the BBC carried out, and which went very well. And as a result, they were terrified and never did it again.
Was this Wisbit?
Yeah.
Wisbit is a thing of the demon realms, and not to be brought forth like YouTube Wisbit, and we're not sorry. Okay. Paul Daniels famously did a Halloween special in the very early 1990s where he finished with an elaborate escape, which was supposed to be him getting out of an Iron Maiden, which is not him having the band fired at him at high velocity, but rather a very large spiky cupboard which shut on him and apparently killed him. And they just didn't mention anything about it for like 2 hours. And of course, being terribly British, my family, I watched this and went, fairly certain we've just seen a man die. Do you want a cup of tea? And this landed in a very similar kind of period of time to Ghostwatch. Ghostwatch, for those of you who haven't seen it, is...
Terrifying.
And it's terrifying in an insidious and really evil way. It is presented as a terrible early 90s live TV event. It's presented by the exact people you think would present a terrible early 1990s live TV event. And then about half an hour in, very slowly it starts to go to hell. And the final sequence, which involves these words in various stages of combination, TV studio, flames, demonic voice, talk show host, seared themselves into my brain. So the whole time I'm going along going, obviously I'm a science fiction guy because I like spaceships and nuns from hell. You know, and Pseudopod finally let me realize that I was a horror guy wearing a spacesuit. And that's kind of where I am. So I'm going to jump around a little bit in order and ask Gemma my next question, which is, what keeps you in horror?
I think the license to be as imaginative as you can. You can do anything with horror, and I love that. And I was talking to somebody at the stand earlier on today. So my jam is people-based horror. I write about people first and foremost, and my main concern when I sit down and write anything is how are the characters feeling, what are their main motivations, how do they go through their lives and why, and the decisions and the stories grow up around the people. And sometimes the horror is almost incidental. It's something that happens around them. But with horror, you can just, it's just free license to let your imagination run riot. And I think that's what keeps me there. And I do dip into sci-fi and I do dip into the more kind of psychological thriller side of things. But I like ghosts and ghoulies and monsters and things that go bump in the night, because you can just let your imagination go. And yeah, that keeps me firmly grounded.
Absolutely. Well, everything that Gemma just said. But also, I, the thing with horror, and especially with ghost stories, is that they are timeless. Mm. They can be absolutely present day, but they can be so, timeless, which I don't need to explain the word. But horror, and especially audio horror, I love the audio medium simply because it leaves all of the details to your imagination. It is all there, and you are painting your own pictures, and you can scare yourself as much as you want to with what you're listening to, or if it's on a book, what you're reading. And so that's what I like. It becomes a lot more personal to you as the devourer of the horror, if you like. That's my.
For me, I'm going to give a sort of shorter term answer, which is that for reasons beyond my understanding, but I'm happy to know, cosmic horror is currently basically getting in vogue, which is phenomenally useful. But what that also means is, oh God, Alex has just had a brain drop from like 10 years ago at uni. Okay, cool. So we have emergent culture, we have dominant culture, and we have residual culture. As Lovecraftian horror shifts from emergent to dominant, one is left wondering what is emergent next. Now, what I'm getting at is... Yeah, I just channeled a 10-year younger version of me who was a pompous arse.
I'm very intimidated by
that. So what is interesting to me is we all know now what's currently interesting, what's kind of in vogue and what's going there. But for horror, we are due something new. The same way that sort of the zombie trope came in and then kind of faded and so on, we are now due one. And a lot of the time, what is due next is defined by what leaves public domain, because that is what allows... what enters public domain, because it allows experimentation within the space. So it's like, okay, cool, this thing's become public domain, it's fair game. And in podcasting, what we are as an industry is one enormous playground where people get to make things that no one in their right mind would ever option for anything else. Yeah. Right up until it's successful and go, oh yes, we were definitely thinking about that, oh yes, yes. But what that means is we're due... Right now, we are due a big new thing, and I don't know what it is, for horror, combined with an industry that's still able to just suddenly have 10,000 people go, I think it's this, 9,000 to be wrong, and everyone to still be having a good time and not care, you know? Like, that's why I'm here right now, if you know what I mean.
I'm in horror because I really like jousting with windmills, especially cultural ones. I firmly believe horror is one of the most fundamentally hopeful genres of fiction there is, and it's hopeful, I think, in two very different ways. There is the Schadenfreude element, which is, well, at least that's not happening to me. Yes. And there's also the survival element. And I mean, this is kind of an easy get, but I think an awful lot about Cabin in the Woods and about the moral dilemma that breaks down very starkly in the final 15 minutes of that and where various characters land. And that idea, that kind of visceral interaction with ethics, is something which I think horror does. I wouldn't say no other genre does it, because I know lots of other people in those genres and I know where I live. But I think horror engages with it in a way that very few others do, and I really respond to that. And my dark days, I found tremendous strength in horror stories.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, to add to that, I think for me personally as well, I have been very open about mental health issues and my own experiences with them. And I feel like horror is a safe space to explore that. And I think a lot of horror fans are drawn to the genre for that reason. They find actually scary stories quite comforting for their anxiety issues. I know I do. But also you can... there is a lot of horror to be found in the everyday and in your own struggles and in your own story. So I think that also keeps me in the genre, because I write about those things. Those things interest me, and I explore my own issues through the things that I write. So, yeah, I think you're... Yeah,
agree. So I want to pick up on something which Alex mentioned, which is the idea of the thing that's coming. For two reasons. Firstly, because my favourite definition of horror is William Friedkin's one of how true horror is seeing something approach. And secondly, because I'm curious, it ties very neatly into one of the things I wanted to talk about, which is, why do we think the horror audience is growing? Because it is.
I'd be happy to take a stab.
Please do.
I think several. I think certainly one element is picking up on what Gemma was just saying, which is that horror is a very useful space for you to literalise issues both of the time and of a personal nature and stab them repeatedly. Yeah. By which I mean, yeah, it's really useful to have a space where allegory is not only encouraged but accepted and a bloody useful tool. But what that means is, shocker, in times of uncertainty, horror tends to do well. And it's because what you are doing is, at least what you can do, this is not the only answer by any means, is you can take the big questions, you know, are we all doomed? Maybe a bit smaller. Questions about economy, questions about mental health. Yeah. Genuinely, anything that's really gnawing at people. The thing that you wake up in the morning and you have that thought again and go... And then what it does is it allows you to transcribe that onto a landscape that has, A, a set of rules that you can navigate. Don't open the door. If you open the door, you deserve it. Come on. Don't split up. But my point is, these are knowable rules which help you codify this weird, scary idea that you've got into something that you can navigate, because we all know how stories work. So when a character is navigating that space, you are navigating it with them. And then the additional thing is, it makes them conquerable. Like Alice was saying about survivable, is if your world is trying to kill your characters and your world is an allegory for whatever you want to explore, if your characters are surviving that, you're taking that journey with them. You're surviving the thing that you're afraid of. I should stress, that's not the be-all and end-all of horror. In fact, that's often not the way that I personally engage with horror, but I think, sort of culturally speaking, that probably strikes a note with a decent number of people.
Cool. Either of you two want to jump in?
I'm just trying to think of a way of phrasing it. I want to use the term humanist, but I'm not sure that's the right expression.
Sounds good to me.
But it's the idea that, you know, we're all human, and there are certain things in our lives that drive us from the day we're born to the day that we cease to be, and they're quite basic things. And I think, and in times of hardship, for example, you know, we've been having a bit of a shitty time in this country lately, and people revert back to those humanist principles as things to sort of comfort themselves with. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I'm gabbling. I gabble.
It makes you knowable.
Yeah, it's about something that you can relate to. Mm. I think as a reader or a listener or a watcher or a consumer of any kind of media, and I think the popularity increases, particularly in conjunction with things like Netflix streaming and looking for content, and they want so much content that we're now seeing much more prevalence with horror on mm-hmm. things like TV. And I think that goes hand in hand with podcasting and everything else. So I feel like it's a human-driven thing. Like, we want to watch and listen and consume things that remind us of ourselves, sci-fi, perhaps you don't. It's grander, isn't it? The scale is grander with sci-fi.
It's almost the payoff between pragmatism and realism.
Mm. You said that much more efficiently than
I did. Yours was better, though. I couldn't have got there without you.
Yeah, you didn't do it with humanism.
That took me exactly 10 minutes of going around the houses, and you got there in like 1 second.
And I think it also gives people control over what is going on in the horror. Because as we've been saying, we've not been having a fun time recently anywhere in the world, really. And that can be it can give a lot of people a lot of anxiety about, especially where you can't do anything about it. We're fed news with a theme tune, which is like a heartbeat, and we're conditioned to take in this news and be filled with this horror that is happening out there. And we can't do anything about it. Yeah. We're given the option once every, 2 years for the last 4 years, but once every 5 years to even have a go at doing something. And that puts us in a really...
It's a bind, isn't it? Yeah.
It is. It's a horribly, I can't, helpless place. Yeah. So having the opportunity either to write horror and externalise, or to watch it and go along with it, but also be able to stop it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gives us that control over some aspect of this emotional stimulus.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, those are all amazingly great answers. I'm actually just letting all of that sink in for a second. All of this seems to be building up to something which we've all touched on, which is the sense of there is something coming next in the field. And I'm curious, before we get into the kind of nitty-gritty of the logistics of voice acting and kind of soliciting work and script writing and being the arch lich nemesis genius child and all of that,
not me.
You were given a cloak today. I really don't know.
I was given a cloak. I've never had a cloak before.
Yeah. What do we think is next for the field?
I think you'll see more genre blending. I think so. For example, cosmic horror, folk horror, cosmic folk horror.
Ooh,
that kind of genre crossover.
Stop, cosmic folk horror, that's the answer. I bloody love that.
It's, I don't know.
Coming soon from Rusty Quill.
That's a really
you
good
can't have
pitch.
That. That's mine. This is copyrighted now to me. But you know, like, I think people are getting much more adventurous, and also unique ideas are kind of few and far between now. in the field. There is no such thing as a unique idea. Everything's been done before. That's why we have tropes, and tropes are enjoyable for that reason.
And we'll be getting to them.
Yeah. But you can do have a new take on an old-fashioned trope, and one of the ways of doing that is by blending the genre, and I think that's where we'll go. I think we'll see a lot more crossover between, like I said, those kind of sub-genres, if that makes sense.
I'm certainly thinking Armageddon. Just in general. But,
just in general, yeah.
And possibly also in fiction.
And also, yes, possibly. Yeah, I think that the with films like Midsommar what was the other one?
Hereditary.
Hereditary, so that's the one. Sort of bringing back Wicker Man style idea. I'd go along with the folk horror. But I'm just thinking, what's out there in the world today? How can that be reflected? Because it was about 10 years ago that there was that huge swell of like weather films. And suddenly everything was being destroyed by cold or wind or tornadoes or something. And there's just a huge swell at the time. And I'm just, as we look at the world today, I think probably more
plague
personal
stories.
Horror.
Plague stories.
Plague stories. Mm-hmm. But I think personal / folk / /
But everything cycles as well. Trends cycle, and you'll have, like David said, you'll have a spate of disaster movies and then a spate of something else. And
I think we'll all just
go through the various cycles and then come back to slashes probably in about 10 years' time. Or if you're talking movies,
There is one thing I've seen a little bit of evidence for, and I think that this will be fascinating, which is we might actually be in the time period where Lovecraft has successfully contextualized his corpse separated from its bones, those bones salted and buried in multiple locations across the earth, lest it rise again. We are a couple of weeks out, I think, from the release of a movie adaptation of The Color Out of Space, which is one of the genuinely very good Lovecraft stories, directed by Richard Stanley, who directed Hardware, which is a film which feels like you have contracted a fever while you're watching it. And starring Nicolas Cage. We might be off to the races here, my friends. All joking aside, there are multiple projects which seem to be approaching Lovecraft in a very kind of clear-eyed, or in Cage's way, wild-eyed and hasn't slept for 2 weeks way, which are engaging with the very negative elements of his past and his beliefs and finding something positive that they can tear off those bits to get to. And I would, as one of the core frustrations of this field, I often find, is that its tendency to feel the very strong gravitational pull of Lovecraft in particular. And I like new things. I like things which have been created by people who don't look like they could conceivably be my brother or the uncle that we really don't like to talk to. I like old stuff as well. Yeah. I just like new things a lot too. And I would be really interested and very hopeful to see the field kind of go in that direction.
I think that's a good point as well to mention representation in horror.
Yes.
And horror diversifying through, for example, women in horror. Much more obvious movement now of women writing horror. Doing very well, and all sorts of different diverse voices, Latinx horror, the full works. And if you hang out on Twitter at all, you'll see various different hashtags and things trending, and I think that will influence the genre as well hugely as we move forward.
And even better, because there's always a tendency with foreign language material to assume it's terribly worthy, and it's not. There are just as many greasy cheeseburgers with foreign language subtitles on them as there aren't. There's a Netflix show called Diaboleros, which is literally supernatural just in Mexico and is exactly as much fun as that sounds. So there's so much great stuff out there, and one of the upsides of the late stage capitalist consumer culture we are all trapped in is it's much easier to get to. So yay.
But if I may, I know we want to move on, but you know me, I can't shut up. I think at the risk of sounding like I'm trying to devalue horror, I'm not. That there is a reactionary element to horror as well, which is one of the ways that you can see the shape of things to come in terms of horror is you look at the way of the shape of what's big at the moment, and horror's going to deliberately try and do something different to that or underwhelm that or break it apart into little bits. So take a look around at you. What are you seeing a lot of at the moment? What's that? Disney owns the world, and it's all superheroes as far as the eye can see.
my instincts say that as much as I would love a brand new monster, it's not going to happen. That's not the way it works. But what we're realistically, I think, going to start seeing is the more that we lean into this homogenized model of storytelling where people rejected stuff like the Dark Universe, you know, the Tom Cruise one, where basically where they went, cool, we'll make horror the way that we make all the other stuff that we make. And everyone went, nope, hate it. Yeah. Don't do that. And I think that as a result, if you just take whatever's there and invert it, you're at least going to start getting the shape of things, I think. Mm-hmm. Which means that I totally agree with you in that I think you're going to start seeing probably a schism, if I'm honest, where I think you're going to see a lot of people still pushing for the huge scale, like, you know, I sneezed and the world ended, explore. Mm-hmm. But also that real nitty-gritty, grounded, focused one, mm-hmm. and bringing in some of the more older stars, like you said, things coming back into circle where it's like, it is a very tight family drama. Mm-hmm. Where one of the characters was dead all along, or whatever. My point being that it's far more focused rather than the huge sprawling stuff, which is everywhere all the time.
I think less so perhaps with podcasting, though, and with audio drama, you have much more diverse material that tends to reach your ears before things reach your eyes on the screen, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And further to that, I'm curious as to what tropes in audio horror make the panel kind of sit up and pay attention.
Audio specifically.
Well, I mean,
we are Pod UK.
From my perspective, probably from David's, we are no sleep people, and we are big lovers of the creepypasta. So, creepypasta trope, I guess, is a trope.
Could you explain that, just in case any of the audience don't know what it is?
So, for anybody that doesn't know what creepypastas are, they're short internet-based stories. And the No Sleep podcast in particular started by adapting the subreddit. So there's a subreddit with a load of very short creepy stories written by whoever wanted to upload one. And it grew from there. So I think, from my perspective, I am very fond of a creepypasta. I'm fond of a campfire story. And I think that is a trope that will never die. And you can see it with the multitude of YouTube channels dedicated to it. Hundreds of podcasts out there that all do that kind of, let's tell a scary story around the campfire.
It's the gleeful refusal to contextualise that I love about them. It's just, here is a horrible thing that's happened.
Yeah.
The end.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. And it's usually first person as well. So I went to the store and somebody chopped my head off at the end. And it's like, and that's actually really enjoyable because you can relate to it and it's very easy and quick to digest and you can have fun with it. So I think that's my favourite. Was that the question? My favourite trope? Yeah, there we go. I got that.
On the flip side, the long form, claustrophobic, atmospheric, slow burn ghost story or horror that builds up over time, which is definitely the Jamesian style of Shadows at the Door that we enjoy, but the White Vault and things like that is a very claustrophobic slow burn. It's a bit like The Thing, but even longer. So that's one of the things. The Long Thing, yes. We're being filmed, Gemma. So yes, that's...
I was actually just about to say I'm really glad you brought that up.
Come again?
Maybe later.
I'm getting all hot here.
It's been a long day. There's actually a new version of The Thing being...
Is there really?
Yeah.
Another new version.
Blumhouse have it.
Yeah.
Which means one of two things. It will either be awful, the equivalent of a three-minute guitar solo, which is what really good Blumhouse movies tend to be, or it will be the equivalent of 3 minutes of lift music guitar solo, which is what the other Blumhouse movies tend to be.
Very sceptical.
Okay. So tropes in audio. Here's one that I personally like playing to type a little bit, which is on the sound design side. So let's go into the audio bit hard. I really like. So I don't. It's easier to say what I don't like and then come back from there. So what I don't like is grossly overproduced. Mm-hmm. You know, I went up to the door. I stepped across the floor. Clunk, 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 clunk. It's like, great, fabulous. You found a Foley kit. Cool. What I really... Sorry, me, it's just...
I know. Don't hold that.
Sorry.
You're among friends.
Okay? That is... There are no specific culprits I have to mind there. But all burns. I mean, though, is that people who feel that, you know, it tends to come with jump scares, you know? You know, open the door and there's a monster. Blah!
I like a good jump scare.
See, I don't
especially
mind...
Especially with audio.
But I like an artful scare.
You know,
scare.
When you're... okay?
What I don't like is, you know, welcome to the... Blah, got you!
Scare me like one of your French girls.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah.
But what I do like a lot is when people put the effort in and make something very calm, very measured, very grounded, and they treat the audio the same way that you treat the actual horror content itself, which is the audio is perfectly normal in every way, apart from this one
little thing,
weird thing. Mm,
and like as the recorded noise,
hypothetically,
yeah.
And as the story progresses, that one weird thing grows more prevalent, much like the ghost in the room. You know, the M.R. James thing of you take the thing in the background, you slowly make the background overwhelm the foreground. That in sound, I love it. Where I listen to something and go, that sounds kind of real, and then I forget that I'm listening to horror for at least 15 minutes, and then stuff gets weird, and I realise it was weird for the last 10 minutes.
Mm.
That's what I like, I think. But that's a very me answer.
It's a good one, though. I mean, in terms of kind of horror tropes that excite me, any of you who are in the audience this morning know that any story which involves letters and a sea monster, I'm dying happy, frankly. In terms of stuff which audio horror podcasts do very well, honestly, everything the people on this panel produce has something in it which I really, really respond to. No Sleep's wonderful ability to not only commit to creepypasta as an aesthetic, but as an approach, and the way that they use that to filter the lens of old school 1950s EC horror comics. Mm-hmm. You know, where, again, it's just that, here's a horrible thing. Can we stop it? No!
I love that. That was the shoe at 2020. That's your takeaway for this panel.
The White Vault, which is genuinely one of the best slow burn horror stories I've ever encountered, where you get to the end of the first season and go, I'm terrified. Five things have happened, but I'm terrified. it's an amazing show.
Yeah.
Call in Darkness, which...
We kind of take all of those tropes and gleefully stuff them into every single episode, as many as we can get in, so that we can make fun of them.
And you have a self-aware narrator as well. And
we do have a self-aware narrator.
As a kid who grew up watching Danger Mouse, self-aware narrators are it for me. They're just so great.
Go-to.
Yes.
How is that your go-to?
Did you never see the old school Danger Mouse?
I do, it's just of all the choices.
Okay. We don't have time to explain how Danger Mouse is an archetypal piece of late 20th century horror. Leave it with me. Also, M.R. James. I mean, I know I was busting on old dead white guys earlier. Well, Lovecraft, because it's Lovecraft, screw him. But M.R. James is, if you're gonna do horror stories, do M.R. James, ghost stories, rather. Do M.R. James, for God's sake, because he wrote hundreds of them, and they're all great. You know, and those four shows, and the one I do, because I also do a horror show, do a really, really good job of kind of exploiting some of the really interesting and positive elements of the field and doing it in fun and varied ways. And, I mean, if there are any of these shows that you don't listen to and you're remotely interested in the field, you really should, because you'll find something incredibly different to what you already encounter. And some of it you'll hate, and some of it will lead you down roads you never thought you'd go down, and you'll find out much more about your tastes. And I love that stuff as a journalist and as a podcaster. And it's an endlessly positive experience for me. And that leads me on to one of my last questions, which is, I'm going to put my panel on the spot a little bit here and ask them to talk about one or two of the shows they listen to, but not all of them, and why they like them. And Mr. Newell has Thinky Finger, which leads me to believe he's imminent, so...
Oh, no, don't mind me.
Okay.
Audio-specifically.
Ideally audio-specifically.
And horror-specific?
Wow.
Horror-specific, if possible. If we could stick to audio-drama as kind of the outer boundary, that would be great. Oh, and we're going to do questions for about the last 10, 15 minutes, if anyone has.
I was a big Black Tapes fan before anything else, so... Black Tapes was a long form single story, and you can really, and every episode had a new layer and a new scary element to it, We won't talk about the ending, but we will talk about the fact that they re-released the last series and renamed the last episode the mid-season finale, so there is hope.
There's more of it. Yeah. There's like six more now.
Yeah. Are they out now?
Yeah. They dropped it basically.
Happy days. I've listened to so many podcasts, it's impossible for me to talk about all of them, but I'm a huge No Sleep podcast fan, actually. Like, I write for the show, but I was a fan first and foremost, and there's thousands of hours of content that I wade through. I listen to Shadows at the Door, I listen to The White Vault, I listen to Magnus, I listen to Pseudopod, I listen to pretty much all those names that you know and love. I also, a non-horror one, which really influences me, which I know we're not supposed to talk about, is a little show by Ian Chillag called Everything is Alive, which is a series of interviews with inanimate objects. And the first episode is about a can of Coke called Louis, and his main desire in life is to be drunk. He's been kept in the back of the cupboard for 20 years or something, and it's the most existential stuff I think I've ever listened to. And actually, I like to diversify because I think horror should be informed by different genres and stuff as well. So that's me getting myself out of the way.
I think I have, like, 1.1, bear with me on this one, follow me. So for the one, it's an easy one, although it feels like a trite answer for a panel, which is Pseudopod, because I was listening to Pseudopod before I'd ever made anything, and Pseudopod does one thing specifically really, really well, better than anyone, which is curation specifically. And what that means is, if you're interested in the field, you can just tune in and pick a random smorgasbord of the Pseudopod stories and go, that's interesting, I've not seen that. I know that. Ooh, what's that? But my point is that it is someone going out there and going, you should see this. It's like having your own dedicated personal librarian for the genre. That's cool. I liked that. I also enjoy making Alistair awkward, so I will continue. But it is, what's useful is, because of the very nature of the format, that anthology of shorter of fictions, and the occasional slightly longer, is it exposes you to far more very quickly. So if I'm being brutally honest, in a way he doesn't know, I learnt horror from him and Pseudopod. The point, yeah. The trick is to look this way. And my point one is going to be one where I think people would be shocked to know this of me. I found the very initial stages of Welcome to Night Vale very interesting. I think as it progressed, as any project does when it progresses over a certain length of time, it begins to, what's the word? Like, I'm trying to say it in a way that doesn't sound horrible. Like, fossilite, that's not right. Like, it
ossify,
thank you. Yeah, what it does is it goes, this works, so that comes up again, and then that comes up again. But the longer that you run out of options, unless you grab two things, smash them together, and hope that something comes out. But very early Night Vale, where it didn't really know what it wanted to be yet, trod a far more interesting line for me.
Exploratory.
And it took some real hard turns where it was like, I'm happy, everything's terrible. And it was just like, whoa! Especially genuinely, like the first five or so, genuinely was like, ooh, what are you?
Excellent.
And there was a British version of that called Gallowtree. Welcome to Gallowtree, which is still going now, but it is the British version of Night Vale. It certainly started that way. I had to get my iPod out to look through my podcast list. And the one that I've sort of zoned in on is called Down Below the Reservoir.
Good choice.
It's beautiful. It is horror and poetry smashed together with a gorgeous Irish brogue. So it is the most poetic podcast that does horror. So that would be my suggestion. The Caledonian Gothic was similar for the Scots, but Down Below the Reservoir would absolutely be my choice. Just having a look through Unseen Hour, which is horror plus the Goon Show, which is fantastic. Darkest Night was brilliant. Blah blah blah. Hidden Frequencies, which is kind of that's what's his it Yeah, it's Mick, but what's the...
Oh, it's, yeah, hidden frequencies.
It's the TV version.
Like the Twilight Zone sort
Twilight
of style.
Twilight Zone, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Hidden horror frequencies. Horror scripting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. I have a couple. There are two produced by the same company with the splendid name Zoom Doom. One is a show called Mirrors, which is initially a ghost story, and it's a ghost story set in three different time periods with the 1960s, 2080, and 2019, with three different women being haunted by the identical ghosts. Mm-hmm. And the second season does one of the best jobs of unpacking and exploring and rebuilding a premise I've ever encountered. It's extraordinarily good. And Zoom Doom have this incredible capability to take a very simple premise and do unbelievable stuff with it. The other show is a thing called The Six Disappearances of Ella McCrae. And it's about a young woman on a family holiday. And they go out for a hike. She steps up onto a rock and she dies. Or she disappears. Or suddenly they're in a desert and she's walked off. Or she's abducted by someone. Or suddenly they're in a New York street and she's run over and killed. And six people witness her disappear at the same time. None of them can agree on what happened. And it is the closest to a modern version of Picnic at Hanging Rock I have ever encountered. It has that monolithic sense of something completely supernatural and alien just under the surface. And I really respond to that. There's also a show which I've been frantically Googling for the last 5 minutes and maddeningly that I can't remember the name of. I'll put it on my Twitter feed and hashtag it with the hashtag, so hopefully you folks can find it, which is a Canadian series about a small town with a local monster.
Oh, is that Blackwood?
I believe it might be.
Yeah, no, yes. I listened to that. That was yes. really very good. Superb production quality.
Oh, God, yeah. And again, just yeah. unpacks itself so beautifully.
Yeah, really very nice. It's a tale of local teenage journalists kind of exploring the local monster.
Yes.
And it's done brilliantly, but I don't actually think there's a second series. I'm not sure.
I will dig in because I might be thinking of another one as well, and I'll put them both on the feed. Yeah. I would like to thank my incredible panel for being exactly as erudite and articulate and perceptive as I knew they would be. And we're going to throw the floor open to questions if anybody has.
Is that one of those throw mic things?
Yes. Wow.
Do you want to throw it? I had those last year.
Thank you.
Spongy mic.
Okay, for those of you who don't know, this is a throwable microphone.
It's really hard and heavy.
It's squishy. And I cover these things quite openly.
They're great.
Who would like to ask a question?
I don't do horror. Like, my family would genuinely, when I said, I'm listening to the Magnus Archives, my family went, what's that? And I said, it's a horror podcast. And they all went, who are you and what have you done with Kai? So what do you think, because I've spoken to other people as well, and they don't touch like movies or TV that is horror, but they found that they've really enjoyed things like the Magnus Archives and Pseudopod and other horror podcasts. Do you think that there's anything that in particular brings people into this specific way of presenting horror? Or
the number of people that have said that they fall asleep listening to the No Sleep podcast is amazing. Even I fall asleep listening to the No Sleep podcast.
It can be very chill.
It's very relaxing.
Exactly. And part of what you were saying earlier, Alex, about the audio production not being too sort of smash or too jarring, it's basically like going back to childhood and having a story being read to you as you go to sleep. But that it was just amusing. That
I think there's a lot to be said for how much control you have as a listener.
Yeah.
And I think when you're watching a film or you're in a movie, a cinema watching a movie, there are no trigger warnings. There is no respect for your particular personal traumas or any of that. You're either in there or you're not. With podcasting and with audio drama, you can choose to engage on whatever level you wish. And I think a lot of people are able to access and consume horror in audio format more comfortably than they can in other mediums, if that makes sense. I also think the community, the audio community, cares a lot more about those sorts of things. I know when we do Calling Darkness, we have an intro that sort of states that there are some certain themes. It's a comedy show, but there are still themes that you might not want to engage with. And I think as a listener, you should have as much control as you need so that you enjoy what you're doing instead of, you know, feeling unnecessarily unsettled or upset.
And I think combined with that as well is, I mean, it's been brought up a few times today, which is that podcasting as a medium is probably one of the most intimate entertainment products you can really engage with because it's happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So as a result, building on what you just said, mm-hmm. what you have is control of the situation so you can bail, take a break, or skip chunks and it'll be fine.
Yep.
Combined with one of the most immediate ways to engage in the genre. Mm-hmm. I think there's some interesting stuff being done in VR, in fairness, which hits the same boat mm-hmm. where you can just go, nope, mm-hmm. I'll go back to it, and it's still immediate. Yeah. But I think podcasting does that in a way that doesn't require an outlay of, you know, £4,000. Mm-hmm. And I think it, a combination of those factors certainly make it a lot more accessible.
Yeah. I'd like to build on all the other stuff the panelists have said and add in as well the fact that podcasting is, there's always a kind of very pleasingly subversive element to listening to a podcast because it's both intimate and passive. You can be doing something else as well. Mm. And more than once with certain shows, I've got to not sure I like this, I'm going to take the headphones off and concentrate on the washing up.
Yeah.
And it becomes a, as everyone has said, the control is very much in your hands mm. all the way through, and I really dig that.
Yeah,
I think there's also an element, because it is the audio medium is uniquely visual in your own mind. Does your own mind provide its own filter mechanism whereby the visual film, etc., you get shock, horror, stabby, something that's possibly overwhelming and the kind of thing that you, yeah, it's being imposed upon you rather than you drawing it from within your own experience and your brain with its own protections in. Hence, it gives you that level of protection to the point you love or are just at the edge where you're as uncomfortable as you want to be. Mm.
The volume control is always in your hand. It's kind of great. Mm. Who's next?
So bad at catching.
You said earlier about horror being kind of getting involved with other genres. Do you think, in terms of audio drama, there's a chance that other mediums within the genre will kind of get involved, like stuff like RPG podcasts and like improv? Do you think there's a chance? Obviously, there's a lot of horror elements in those, especially sequel gaming.
I guarantee somebody is out there making that show right now.
I'm aware of at least one.
Podcasting is so accessible. Mm. It really, really is. You need a room full of friends, or you can be a lone operator. You need a halfway decent mic, access to a bit of software as a starting point. I'm not saying that those are the things that you should stay with throughout your podcasting career, but it's incredibly accessible. It's a lot easier to make a podcast than it is to go off and write a book, trust me, I know, or to make a movie, you know, in terms of initial outlay and how you can teach yourself to do things. So I guarantee, yes, there will be, because it's so much more accessible, it's so much easier to experiment with those other mediums and yeah, there's got to be at least 10 of those out there now, by now.
Though, to play devil's advocate, on the flip side of the coin, there is an aspect to consider, which is, I'm not a fan of horror. Okay, cool. So that means that, let's assume, I am not a fan of horror, you're not going to listen to this thing. I am not a fan of gaming, therefore you're not going to listen to this thing. The danger that always comes with a genre blend is, the dream is, oh, the fans of this will engage with the fans of this, great. There is a dark side to that, which is that your horror fans don't like gaming, so they don't listen, and your gaming fans, they don't like horror, so they don't listen, and then you're left with Gary.
And Gary is lovely.
The joy of podcasting is not everyone has to like it. If you want to make a podcast for Gary, then go knock yourself out.
And I tell you what, Gary will adore
Gary will
you,
love you
forever because you made the perfect show as
you
far
don't
as Gary's
need to
concerned.
Right, nobody makes a podcast to make money or be famous. Come on, that's the number one. Right? So you make it because you love it. You make it because it's a passion project, and that's why you should pretty much do everything creative, I think. And so if you want to make that super niche thing, then you know, somebody will make it. And yes is the answer.
If no one in this room is using the term using the hashtag justice for Gary, I'm very
poor Gary.
So the BBC have belatedly got into horror podcasts. Mm. Have you listened to The Case of Charles Dexter Ward and The Whisper in Darkness? And if so, what did you think of them?
I've listened to The Case of Charles Dexter Ward, and I really liked it. Like I was saying earlier, my kind of entry level with Lovecraft is, are you doing something strange with it, which would probably have pissed him off?
That's a really good
what the hell, you know? And I really liked its willingness to completely engage with a very modern storytelling framework and to with the kind of weird and lumpy bits of the story. So yeah, my initial thing was, oh, it's Charles Dexter Ward again, great. And then I listened to it and was very pleasantly surprised. So yeah, I really dug that.
I very much enjoyed it, but I also thought, we've been doing this for years.
Yeah, I haven't, and I think I'm so invested in indie podcasting and in independent producers and genres that I consume so many podcasts that it's difficult sometimes to go to the more commercially. Does that make sense? Like, yeah.
I have to confess, I also haven't listened to it, but yeah. Not for any reason beyond I didn't get round to listening to it. I'm quite disorganised in how I spend my leisure time. So
it's also worth pointing out Alex sleeps 15 minutes out of every 37 hours.
But recently achieved a high score in Beat Saber, so my work-life balance is off.
With the growth of things like the BBC Murmurs podcasts, where they're sort of seeking out independence, do you think there's a horror podcasting is influencing beyond the immediate genre, or outside podcasting, or with the big publishers?
Yes. Alex.
I'm happy to say that. I think what some of the bigger players are starting to notice is that the interest is there, and if the interest is not catered to, it will cater to itself. And that's what has been happening. Gary really wanted that gaming horror show. Gary made that show. Turns out a lot of people wanted Gary's show. Gary does well. I think that it's reached the point now where, not just in horror, but in other mediums as well, genre fiction in general, I'd say, is sort of hitting its stride, really. Certainly in terms of bouncing into larger like production spaces. And I think it's a case of, Let's all be horrible, cynical, skeptical bastards like me. People like money. Successful things are more likely to make money. As a result, you can expect that if the thing that you like has become popular, larger entities are going to start getting more invested in it. I should say that I'm kind of separating out BBC a little bit because it doesn't really have the need for money in the same way. It kind of survives on its own, but certainly on the private side, you're going to start seeing more of like, bad example, it's not horror, but you know, like Wolverine, The Long Night, and all of that kind of thing, because they know that, yeah, they know the demand is there, and you're going to start seeing bigger players starting to just make more of the shows that you would normally associate with indies, and especially in podcasting.
And to some extent, you've already seen that with Luminary.
Yeah. Good example of a poor execution, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think if you're a statistician and you're looking at download figures and you look at some of the biggest shows out there and see that there are a lot of them are in the genre, then it makes sense to cater to that in your own audience. I'm hesitant because I'm not as experienced with the kind of the BBC side of audio as I'd like to be. But that's, I agree.
We are 2 minutes off the end of our time. David, do you have an answer for this?
I was just going to say, it seems like we are, in a way, the sort of proof of concept stage for these bigger companies to come in and make their money off it. So that was basically all I was going to say. Yeah, because you saw, that was it, remembered. Limetown made the jump from podcasting to the TV.
To Facebook.
Yeah.
To Facebook. But,
to sell one soul for power, Richard Budd for Wales.
But again, it's proof of concept. It works. It gets taken up.
Yeah, exactly.
It fails.
And law as well.
Yeah, and law, yes, which is done spectacularly.
So I think we have about 75 seconds left. So, Ella, if your question is very short...
I got to catch it. How would you characterise the relationship between comedy and horror, please?
As a writer of a comedy horror show, the relationship is incredibly important. I think if you want to scare people, making them laugh within 5 minute breath of scaring them is really, really important. You take them to the top and then you smash them down. I very much enjoy pointing poking fun at tropes and littering rude jokes with squishy sound effects is very effective, and I think it's an incredibly important relationship. Yeah, that's my quick answer.
I think they are two genres that both rely on format, structure, and sort of theatrical grammar, as in, you know, setup and beat and so on. Mm-hmm. As a result, they are simultaneously compatible and incompatible, in that if those two formats are layered on top of one another and synced up correctly, you will get something wonderful, and normally a very black comedy will go, really hit you. However, if you lay them up poorly and that theatrical grammar doesn't line up, what you end up with is set up, beat, 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 set, beat, and it's just like, this is a garbage mess. And I think it's one of those things where it's wonderful if it goes well, but you have to be very structurally like deft to make it work.
I just say it's all about timing.
That's a way better way of putting it.
And for me, it's still a cymbal crash if the cymbal is covered in blood.
Yeah. Why am I even here, Alistair?
Ladies and gentlemen, and everybody else, I'm delighted to inform you that not only have we finished on time, but we have finished the end of one of the absolute highlights of my day. Thank you so much to my remarkable panel of ridiculously talented creatives. This is where you applaud them, please. And to you, who have been a fantastically receptive audience, who've given us some of the best questions we've had all day.
And you, Alistair, our fantabulous erudite host, unlike myself, apparently.
This episode is distributed by Rusty Quill and licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-alike 4.0 international license. For more information, visit rustyquill.com, tweet us at @TheRustyQuill, visit us on Facebook, or email us at mail@rustyquill.com. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, it's Kareem, the voice of Simon Fairchild from the Magnus Archives. Today, I'm here to advertise Beck's End, an upcoming new audio drama that will be launching on the RQ Network. Beck's End is a folk horror audio drama about isolation, belief, radicalization, and poses the question if redemption is possible. When floodwaters swallow an idyllic English Lake District village, a stranded journalist finds herself trapped in a rising tide of fear. Cut off from the outside world, she begins to uncover horrors both human and biblical, lurking beneath the surface. If this intrigues you, you can support the creation of Beck's End on Kickstarter until the 17th of July. For more information on the show and to pledge your support, visit becksend.com. That's becksend.com. And you might recognize a voice here or there. Have fun and enjoy the episode.
Hi, Alex here, founder and CEO of Rusty Quill Limited. In case you haven't heard, there is now a Magnus Archives novel. The Library of Jürgen Leitner is set in the world of the Magnus Archives and written by Nebula Award-winning author Premi Mohammed with our very own Jonathan Sims. The story follows Hugh, a university dropout desperate to find somewhere to belong, and his new job at an esoteric library. The books he must investigate for the enigmatic Jürgen Leitner are not normal, because the library is not a vault, sealed and silent, but a hive, alive, buzzing, and ready to sting. The Library of Jürgen Leitner releases October 27th, 2026, but you can pre-order it right now in the US and UK from your local bookshop or by using the link in the episode description. If you live outside of the UK or US, you may be able to make an international order for this first publication, but it depends on individual retailers' shipping policies.